Welcome back to Schnepps Connects. Today, we're diving into the world of luxury real estate with Mauricio Umansky, the founder and CEO of The Agency, which is a billion-dollar brokerage that's redefining the industry with cutting-edge technology and innovative marketing. Since launching in 2011, The Agency has not only transformed the traditional brokerage model, but has also cultivated a unique culture centered on collaboration. Mauricio's track record includes nearly $5 billion in real estate sales, and he holds the distinction of selling some of the most prestigious properties in the world, including the Playboy Mansion, would have loved to get one of those parties, and the Walt Disney Estate. Under his leadership, The Agency has grown to over 120 offices across 12 countries, earning recognition from the Wall Street Journal, Inman, and the Financial Times. Beyond real estate, Mauricio is a committed philanthropist involved in organizations like Give Back Home, the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, and the National Breast Cancer Association. He's also a proud member of the Young Presidents Organization, YPO, which I am as well, an influential business networking group. Mauricio's journey also extends to television. Many of you may know that The Agency was featured on popular shows like Million Dollar Listing Los Angeles, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and Netflix's Buying Beverly Hills. Today, we're going to discuss some of the innovative strategies and unwavering passion that have positioned The Agency as a leader in the luxury real estate market. So Mauricio, great to have you on, and thank you so much for your time.
What an intro. Who is that guy?
Seriously, I love it. You got to hear all about him.
Let's go. Let's have some fun. I'm very excited to be on your show and to talk to you, and let's see if we can, you know, have some fun and make some magic.
Well, listen, one of the things that I love is just talking to entrepreneurs, you know, people that have established themselves as a brand, their businesses as a brand. Not an easy thing to do. I would love for you maybe just to share a little bit how you got started.
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, and I mean, kind of a complicated question because obviously I could take it way back to, you know, to my childhood, but let's just start off with the idea of, you know, where I started in real estate. You know, I dropped out of college. Okay. And I dropped out of college because we were having some, you know, some issues, some money issues. My father called me up and he said, listen, I'm sick of paying for you to go to college to just be a bum. So you're either going to go to college and, you know, do it right or time to get to work. And I literally said to him, I said, give me the weekend. I'll get back to you on Monday. And I called him up on Monday and I said, Dad, I'm going to get to work. I'd rather work. That's what I do. I don't see myself, you know, just rushing it here. And so I went to go work for him. I started to work. I got into sales, into the schmata business, the textiles, fabrics. And I became his number one salesperson within 1 year. And I just knew I was meant for sales. Like that was, you know, and all of his salespeople said, well, you know, you got all the good accounts. And I go, I got all the accounts you guys all rejected. Like you guys have all been here for years. What are you talking about? I got the good accounts. I got the accounts that you rejected. And from there, you know, just kind of grew in sales, loved sales, got into real estate. And through real estate, I really wanted to become like the best salesman possible. In 2007, when everything, you know, went bust, 2008, when everything went bust with the banking crisis, there was an opportunity. And I remember going back to when I was young, and my grandfather always used to tell me, Mauricio, in order to make money, and my grandfather, you know, became a successful, wealthy man. But, you know, in order to make money, you have to buy when everybody's selling and sell when everybody's buying, right? And I'm sitting here, you know, during that time period. And I'm like, oh my God, if I had money right now, I would be buying condos and apartments and houses and just everything, but I don't have enough money. So what, you know, what can I do that, you know, nobody's doing with the money that I do have, right? And so, you know, what I started to do is I started to buy advertisement, and all of my fellow real estate agents stopped advertising. And I bought, you know, pretty much the whole LA Times. You opened up the LA Times and there was, you know, 16 pages total, because, you know, it had gone from 50 to 16, and I was 10 or 12 of those pages, right? And so the perception was that I was the only guy selling, and I was the only guy that was working. Well, a year later, I had an amazing year. I had a stellar year. I crushed it, and I decided to put my specs into what's called the Real Trends, which is what measures, you know, where you stand in terms of, you know, salespeople in the country. Much to my surprise, I was number 7 in the country, number 1 in California. And when I realized that, I said, you know what I'm doing and what is good, I want to be number 1. I got myself to number three. I never got myself to number one. And, you know, when I got there, I said, I'm going to stop chasing number one. But the stuff that I'm doing is repeatable. It's teachable. And I want to, you know, turn it into something bigger. And that's when I decided I was going to do the agency and have teach real estate agents and teach bro agents, you know, salespeople how to sell the way I've been selling. And so I built a company that was built by agents for agents, you know, with the intention of creating something that people could just, you know, learn from and do well and have a competitive, you know, culture, yet collaborative culture. So, you know, there's a very interesting aspect of when you have competitive versus collaborative, and can you have those two be this in the same culture? And the answer is yes, right? And that's kind of the beginning and the genesis of the agency. So here we are 13 years later, 120 offices, 12 countries, and growing.
I love it. Now listen, I'm in sales too, so I can only imagine how you make that collaborative. It's not easy. And a lot of it comes from company culture, right? And leadership, which is fantastic to hear. Let's talk about the market. I mean, it's a crazy time right now. I feel like the market has exploded since COVID. You obviously serve a high-end market with luxury buyers. What are you seeing as far as luxury buyers are concerned across the country?
Look, I've been following luxury clientele now for 25, 27 years. And I started keeping my own Excel spreadsheets and I started to keep my own stats and all that stuff. And I, you know, even from 25, 26 years ago, I went backwards, you know, in order to do that. So I've got 30 years of stats in my own personal Excel spreadsheets. And, you know, we can all start making, you know, really complicated analysis and, you know, and have a bunch of different, you know, ideas in terms of why something is good or bad, you know, from the perspective of whatever, high interest rates, low interest rates, COVID, not COVID, you know, all of these things. But I got to tell you, this is very, very simple. Okay. At the end of the day, there are X amount of high-end luxury buyers in any particular market on any particular year. Okay. And if you look at it, it always averages out to about the same amount. Okay. What happens on boom years is that you get a compression of buyers and more buyers buy because of low interest rates, because of different situations. And then you're going to have the recession years where less buyers buy. Okay. But at the end of the day, you take those 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, it's the same average consistently every single time. What happened right now is that we had a tremendous compression of buyers during the COVID years. The amount of sales that we had over 2 years was equal to the amount of sales of about 7 years.
Wow.
Okay. So when you have that many people enter and compress and buy in 2 years, you're inevitably going to have a lack of purchases at a certain, you know, point. So you just, all that happened was all of these purchases just compressed into a certain time. And then obviously coupled with high interest rates and inflation and a bad economy and all this other things, you know, kind of, you know, plays into it. But that's kind of where we're at.
So I wonder if you have like that, such a strong period in such a, you know, tight timeline, can it continue? Can it hold? Will it lead to some lower, you know, demand years? I mean, what do you think happens in the year ahead after such a strong market?
It always goes into a lower market after such a strong market. And right now we've been in a slow market now for 2 years in terms of the ultra high luxury. So we've actually been slow. If you look at New York, if you look at LA, other than Florida, Palm Beach, Florida, Miami, other than that, the rest of the country has been, you know, slow in the high end luxury real estate. And so I actually predict that, you know, coming into 2025, we're going to start seeing an uptick in the market again. You know, I remember about 18 months ago, 19 months ago, I went on, what was it, on Fox Business News, I forgot with who, and I said, you know, we're in a recession. And I remember him saying to me, who was I on with? I can't remember. He said to me, the host said to me, he goes, you just used the R word. And I go, I did. He goes, you're the first person to use it. I go, I am. And sure enough, we were in a recession. We're in a housing recession. We're in a housing bubble. But I think we're going to start coming out of it by the end of the year and going into 2025.
That's interesting because a lot of times you hear people use recession after the fact, after they've analyzed, you know, months worth of data. But I'm happy to hear that you think that we're going to come out of that, which is fantastic. Talking about growth, you know, obviously you've grown from one office to an international company. How are you maintaining that boutique feel when you're growing so much so fast?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, one of the things that we've done is we've grown strictly out of profits. We've not taken money out of the company. So we started the company with $1 million. And all we've done is just reinvest, 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 reinvest. And so here we are now finally with 120 offices. We're now selling franchises, which is a great model. And the reason we decided to get into franchises is because I believe that real estate is a very local business. And you really need to be part of the community in order to, you know, sell and to be good. So when you try to take your model and be, you know, go corporate and you go into Beverly Hills and you go into Nashville from Beverly Hills, you're kind of bringing Beverly Hills to Nashville and it doesn't grab as well. But if you're able to take the boutique firm, the culture and all of the systems that you have, and then go partner with a Nashville community agent or Hamptons community agent or wherever it is that you're going to, and that person is part of the fabric of the community and you can bring them the tools that you've created in the toolbox, now you create a really great equation that allows you to keep building. How do you maintain the boutique feel in the boutique culture? I think it's all about the people. You have to pick great people. I still to today speak with absolutely every one of our partners. We do not go forward with any of our partners until I speak with them. And until, you know, Rainey approves them, our president and all of those people. And then what we do is we look for people that have that luxury vibe, the feeling of culture, the feeling of family, are driven, are part of the community. And so when we pick our people, we make sure that we are people that belong as part of the culture. And that's how you're able to maintain that boutique feeling. Because even though you can be big, you don't have to be big everywhere. You can just be big in reach, but you don't need a lot of people to be big.
You know, we're based here, obviously, in New York City, our media company, and I've noticed your brand expand across the region here. Talk to me a little bit about that expansion in New York City and maybe how it's different versus where you started off on the West Coast.
New York's a tough market. We're still working our way in there. I always knew it was going to be a tough market to break into. It has been tough. My expectations were not wrong. The Hamptons were actually doing quite well in, and it's been a little bit easier than the city. But Manhattan's been very, very difficult to break into. We're doing it little by little, but it takes tenacity and it just takes being there, you know. And right now, I feel like we're finally starting to be recognized for being there after we've now been there for 4 years, I think. And it just takes time, man. It takes patience. It takes tenacity. It takes time. And it's hard because, you know, it's an interesting market. You guys don't have a full-on MLS. The way that, you know, everybody shares listings is very different than everywhere else. And I knew I was in for a battle. It's been a battle. We're starting to win the battle. And I'm finally starting to feel like we're coming out of it. So I'm very excited.
That's great. Listen, I'm sure everything takes time, especially when you enter very competitive markets, no matter where it is. So I have to assume to develop, you know, your brand further, neighborhood by neighborhood, community by community, takes time.
100%.
You know, talk a little bit about your market. I mean, obviously, you know, you're very well known from television, but how have you differentiated your brand and getting people to know what you stand for?
You know, when we started with the idea of marketing lifestyle versus homes. And I think we were kind of the first people that started in that world. We've always been very innovative in our marketing and very creative. We've always been different. We've always been willing to take risks. Sometimes our ads have ended up, you know, falling on bad ears because we took risks. But by the same token, even when that happens, people notice. So it doesn't suck. But we were the first people, you know, real estate used to be sold, you know, 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, marble countertops, Miele appliances, you know, and we didn't sell it that way. You know, we sold through amazing, you know, event marketing. We sold through lifestyle videos. So rather than the 3 bedrooms, you know, we filmed somebody arriving to their house and living in the house. And we showed that type of marketing and what happens around, you know, where your home is. Is it, you know, what's your local coffee shop? Where are you going to take your pets to go get, you know, showered or whatever that looks like, right? And so we really started looking at marketing just completely different. We were willing to be different. We were willing to take risks and it paid off.
Absolutely. I'd love for you to share a little bit about buying Beverly Hills. I mean, being on reality television, you know, I'm sure it's got its ups and its downs, right? I mean, you know, but talk a little bit about the show and what it's meant to you both personally and professionally.
Yeah, being on buying Beverly Hills has just been an absolute thrill. It's been super fun. It definitely comes with its risks and rewards and its ups and downs. I mean, you know, people, when you're on reality television, fans and people that watch you actually think they know you, and they think they have the right to like just come up and hug you and talk to you and like, you know, invade your privacy because they actually think they know you, right? Like if you're an actor and you're acting as Batman, you're Batman. You're not Michael Keaton, right? Like you're Batman. And so when you're in reality television, it's just a completely different world of how people think that they just have the right to invade your personal space and all of that stuff. So that's kind of the bad stuff. The good stuff for me is, you know, from a business perspective, you know, we've been able to market, you know, the agency and the brand, you know, worldwide. It's been absolutely fantastic from that perspective, which has allowed us to continue to grow and continue to sell franchises and, you know, find great people because great people hear about our company. From a personal perspective, it's just been also amazing because I filmed Buying Beverly Hills with my daughters and my friends, my colleagues. And it really gave me an opportunity to do something with my daughters that was so special, so unique, get to know them on a completely different level, work with them on a completely different level, you know, go from being, you know, father-daughter relationship to being father-daughter-friend relationship, right? And just absolutely changing all of that. I would say that that has been so far the best part of the show is having that personal relationship that I've been able to do and have with my kids. It's just so different and unique than anybody else.
That's so fortunate that you had that experience, you know, professionally and personally, for sure. Yeah. And it seems like you're the kind of guy that just won't stop. You want to keep growing and, you know, continue. What do you see your future in terms of the agency?
Yeah, I don't know how to stop. You know, it's uncertain, to be honest with you, Josh, right now. You know, I'd like to be super optimistic and super rosy, you know, but business is difficult. Real estate right now is going through some difficult times. Real estate brokerage is going through some difficult times. You know, we've all been reading, you know, everything that's happening with the commissions, commission compression, buyer commissions, antitrust lawsuits. There's lawsuits everywhere. You know, I predict that some of the stuff that's happening right now with buyer, you know, representation agreements in order to get in, there's so many things. I actually think that's going to cause more lawsuits. So I'm a little bit uncertain, not only about the agency, but really just, you know, about organized real estate as a whole. And I think that, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. I'm definitely, you know, a big part of the fabric of the real estate brokerage world. And I'm trying to do my best to figure it out, to stay afloat. You know, all of us are talking to figure out, you know, some of these things. You know, I think those of us that survive and stay afloat and can, you know, make it through this will, you know, come out better. You know, but a lot of people are not going to make it. A lot of people are not going to survive these times, which is sad. And it's such a great industry. And, you know, the independents are such an important part of our industry. You know, I still consider ourselves, you know, we're a very large independent brokerage firm or we're a very small corporate brokerage firm. I don't know. You know, we're kind of in the middle of that, right?
Yeah.
But that's kind of, you know, it'll be very interesting to see the, you know, what happens in real estate over the next 12 months.
What about on the client side? How are you guiding clients through this kind of environment?
Clients are all confused. You know, we're doing our darn best to guide them through it. You know, the problem is that even us, you know, in organized real estate, you know, brokers, agents, people that are really in the weeds on this thing are confused. And so, you know, even when we're confused and we're trying to guide our clients, it's very difficult to guide a client, you know, that's confused, that doesn't know what's going on when we're confused and are not 100% what's going on, right? So, you know, right now is just kind of a time that I hate to use the adjective that it's a little bit like the wild, wild west, but we're in the middle of change and we're in the middle of that time. And, you know, we've got to grab the bull by the horns. We've got to learn. We've got to accept it. You know, we can't fight it because it's happening, but it's a tough time.
I feel like you're the kind of guy, you get in front of somebody, you're getting that listing, but how do you go about communicating to your team how to showcase your value? And how to speak to clients about the industry change and what it means to them personally.
That's been one of the largest battles that we're dealing with right now is how to communicate the value of a real estate agent, right? And there's two sides, right? There's a buyer side and there's a listing side. On the listing side, it's probably a lot easier right now because, you know, to communicate that because now more than ever, with all of the changes that are happening with the MLSs and the way that we can advertise and all of those things, you know, a listing agent is critical right now, right? And there's probably going to be a lot of buyers that go directly to a listing agent, you know, which the fiduciary responsibility now is going to be so important. But by the same token, a lot of these buyers are going to say, hey, you know, I'm going to try to represent myself in order to save a commission. That's going to be so dangerous. I just can't imagine a novice buyer or even a non-novice guy who's a real professional, you know, come, you know, against me or against anybody that's been in this business for a while and say, hey, you know, I'm going to negotiate against you who knows absolutely everything on this thing. And I'm going to try to save myself, you know, 1-3%. It's going to cost them a lot more. I've already seen it happening. I've seen it when people are represented by discount brokers, when they come in and they're being represented by a broker that's willing to pay them, you know, do it for just a fee or for a half a point. They always pay more. They never get, you know, good inspections. They're not 100% certain. Their I's are not dotted. Their T's are not crossed. Like, this is probably the most important asset or investment that most people in America make, which is their personal home. Okay. And to try to save a little bit of money to protect your most important asset, I really hope that, you know, buyers don't start doing that. I mean, I can tell you that when I need my knee replacement or if I got a problem, I don't go looking for my discount, you know, doctor. I go looking for the best doctor, right? And so I just really pray that, you know, buyers, and it's going to hurt them and it's going to cause more and more lawsuits because they're going to get into things that they're not going to be expecting. It's going to be very interesting. We're in a very interesting time right now.
Well, Mauricio, I want to thank you for your time, man. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, learn a little bit more about you. And I love your story and, you know, wish you continued success in New York City and across the country and across the world.
Yeah, I enjoyed talking to you so much. Really appreciate your time and thank you for everything.
My pleasure. Make sure to subscribe to Schnepps Connects wherever you got your podcasts or stream us online at podcast.schneppsmedia.com.